Hello and welcome to another edition of the Scarlet Nation podcast. I'm Bobby Darin for ScarletNation.com with the 24/7 Sports Network. Coming to you today to talk some Rutgers football, some Rutgers beat football. We're doing a little different episode today. I have a special guest on. I'm excited to bring on. I'm not going to banter too much with myself. We'll get right to it. But my special guest today is someone who shares the Rutgers beat with me. We're there covering the team day in and day out. Chris Eisman from the Gannett newspapers and websites and NorthJersey.com. You can see his stuff all over on Asbury Park Press, all throughout the state of New Jersey. We've been on the same beat together for a while and always enjoyable to spend time and you know, cover the team. So Chris, thanks for coming on, man. It's great to have you.
It's great to be on. I appreciate it. This is 4 years in the making, this collaboration.
Yeah, we should have knocked it out sooner. So, Chris, we just got done another bout of spring practice covering the team. We'll go into more of the details of what that is and maybe give some people some insight on what we do beyond what they read every day. But I guess just initially, you know, what were your thoughts of spring football? Did it kind of, you know, meet your expectations? Any surprises, anything like that?
You know, I think it kind of was what I expected. Obviously, you know, the spring game was what it was with so many of the regular, you know, starters and even the guys in, you know, the second string guys out. So we didn't really see a ton. But listen, I mean, obviously going into it, we all expected that the quarterback competition was going to be the biggest topic, and it was, and it's going to remain that way probably all through training camp. I think everything kind of went the way that I figured it was going to go. Obviously, a lot of talk, optimistic talk about the defense with so many guys back. Obviously, you know, they're optimistic about what, you know, the running game with Kyle Menungai coming back again and the running back depth. And obviously the wide receivers, so the young guys in that room, you know, Greg Schiano talked them up a lot during the spring and so did Dave Brock. So, yeah, I mean, I think everything, you know, I think if you look at the program now, it has a lot of momentum coming off the 7-6 season and the Pinstripe Bowl win. So, you know, I think the program's just kind of riding that wave.
Yeah, and you know, it's definitely more of an upbeat tone to it. And you weren't on the beat actually when it was the Chris Ash era and the Kyle Flood, but some dark times. But the good news is it was always able to finish my stories well before the game finished. So sometimes people, what's that?
There wasn't a lot of suspense in those days.
Oh, no, not at all. But, you know, when you're up against it at the end, especially you're on deadline a lot of times, mine's a little freer because it's, you know, it's just internet-based, but sometimes you have to get a story in at a certain time. What's it like for you when it changes, you know, field goal here, fumble here at the end of the game? You're scrambling at it, I know, because we banter throughout the game, and there's no real bantering in those final few minutes, but just give people an idea of what that's like when it changes so quickly.
I have a lot of internal banter, a lot of cursing in my head. That's where my banter goes when that's happening. Yeah, I mean, it's stressful, man. You have, you know, two separate stories going. If a game is close, you have a winning story and a losing story. And, you know, you're not really sure what ones you're going to be posting online or you know, what's going into the paper. But, it's stressful. You're trying to react to two different things. And a lot of times, like, you'll be at the end of a game and you won't even see some things that happen because you're so busy trying to write and trying to get the story done and have something published, because we got to have it up as soon as the game's over. So there's stuff a lot of times that I have to go back, you know, the next day or later on and look at replays and rewatch it, because there's just, you don't even get a chance to see some of it. So it's definitely a stressful time, and it's nothing better either way than a blowout, because you at least know you can take some time, you can write the story, you know what's going to happen. There's no last second changes. Football is a little bit better than basketball, too. Basketball is even rougher. But, yeah, man, it's stressful towards the end of games.
You know, when Rutgers blew that 11-point lead, it was last year at Minnesota. I never saw the end of it, but I was listening to it because I was typing, you know, the story, and then I'm like, they're not going to lose. It's 11-point lead. And all of a sudden, oh, God, I have to change the ending of this, the tone of it, you know. So it can really be hectic, and you really feel up against it. But, you know, that's one of the nuances of what we do that people don't regularly see. But, you know, when it comes to covering a team and doing what we do, what is the best part, do you think, for you of this whole occupation?
I mean, I think as corny as it might sound, as cliche it might sound, I think just being paid to watch and cover football is a pretty good way to make a living. I mean, you know, we talk about it a lot, you know, especially during the summer when we're at training camp and, you know, we show up to work You know, and I use that term kind of in air quotes, right? Because we're standing at a training camp practice and it's a beautiful, nice summer day. And you kind of look at, you're going, this is a pretty good way to make a living. Like, this is pretty good. So I think that, you know, is the best part about it, just being around football. And then obviously being able to tell the stories, you know, there's some really, you know, some of these kids have great backgrounds and do some cool things. So I think that that's definitely kind of a favorite part of the job too. And I think, you know, it's cool sometimes to see kids come into the program as young recruits and then become really high level impact players. And you kind of are there from the beginning and you kind of see that ride that they're on, that journey. So, you know, I think that's definitely, and plus you and me and then the other guys, we have some good conversations. Some of them we couldn't probably record and share.
Yeah, he gets some laughs, definitely. And you know, I think one of the best parts too, you can show up, you know, my work clothes are kind of like sweats and shorts or a t-shirt. And I can remember when I first started, I would wear, you know, a little bit, you know, and everybody first starts, they kind of, you know, want to fit the role, most people, especially back when I did. So I'd wear like, you know, a collared shirt and you know, maybe khakis or something. And then, you know, a few years into it, I'd look at Tom Lucci wearing flip-flops and like, wait a minute, man, I think I paid enough dues. I'm starting to get comfortable, you know? So that's always a nice part as well, Chris.
Yeah, you get to a point, you're just putting on t-shirt, basketball shorts and some sneakers and heading out the door. You know, that's a pretty good way to work.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, I mean, what do you think, you know, and with every job there comes some stress. You talked about, you know, the deadlines. What do you think the most frustrating part is, maybe something that is a challenge that it's not so glamorous?
Yeah, well, I think maybe not even so much about covering the team. I think it's just in this day and age of working in media, right? You're always trying to figure out what interests people, what do people want to read, and sometimes trying to gauge the audience and gauge whether or not this is a story. You might think you wrote a story that's going to like get a ton of traffic and get a ton of eyeballs on it, and then it really doesn't. And then a story that you might think is going to get nothing gets a ton of traffic. So I think there's kind of always, there's that stress of trying to figure out, you know, what stories are people going to react to, trying to find those stories, trying to identify them. I think that's definitely probably a lot of where the stress comes in. Because you know you want to have good, you know, performance numbers at work, obviously, and I think anybody can share that in any occupation. So I think there's always that stress of just knowing what are people going to read, what are they not going to read, what's going to interest them, and then sometimes being surprised when, like I said, something goes the opposite direction you felt like it was going to go. So I feel like that's the biggest stress. But I mean, around the team, like for the most part, I feel like there's not a ton of frustrating things that happen with the team itself. I don't know. What do you think?
You know, for my part, the most stressful or frustrating part is when news happens and you have to get it done. Like, I have two kids, so, you know, I could be on the way to gymnastics and then, you know, all of a sudden this guy, we find out some news about this guy. Unfortunately, we get kind of a heads up on most things, but there's always stuff that you don't and you have to find a way to get it done and it could happen anytime. And I often tell people, you know, they say, well, you cover football. I mean, you only play 12 games. I said, you know, some of it's like a soap opera because you see the drama of the sport and we're writing about that sometimes more so than, you know, who caught the passes or who, you know, didn't look good on defense. And you know, that breaking news stuff, it really has escalated. I mean, probably a lot more so since you began as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the funniest thing, too. It's like people say to me, well, now that football's over, what are you going to do in the offseason? I'm like, sometimes the offseason is busier than the season.
Yeah.
Because there's just player movement. You know, there's all kinds. There's obviously a lot of recruiting news and all kinds of stuff going on. So, yeah, I mean, football, you know, covering college football nowadays, it is a 365-year day a year beat. It doesn't end.
Yeah. Yeah. And people would always say to me, even when Rutgers wasn't very good, you know, what do you do? And I'm like, you'd be amazed at how much Rutgers makes headlines for stuff, you know, that isn't, you know, directly football game related. So there's always something going on. But, you know, one of the parts to covering it, I mean, you're at every game too, every road game. I don't make every road game, but, you know, you're taking a lot of trips. You covered the Knicks. I don't know if a lot of people know that. But what would you say was the best place you've ever covered a game and why?
And with the Knicks and with Rutgers, or just Rutgers?
anywhere. Any, you know, when you go to, well, when we go to trips, you know, you go to a different venue, there's a different feel on how everything's run. You really see it. So, and from your perspective, kind of clue people in on what was your favorite one, or one of them, or one of the top ones.
Well, so when I was covering the Knicks, my favorite one was always to either go out to L.A. and when it was still called the Staples Center, covering a game when there was fantastic, and then obviously going down to Miami to when they played the Heat, for obvious reasons. There's never a bad time to be in Miami. So those are my two favorite places to go. But since being on Rutgers, I think going out to Michigan, covering a game at the Big House is really cool. It's an experience, and I recommend anybody who's a college football fan going out and making a trip, regardless of what team you follow, just to see that and see, I mean, people miles and miles, you know, away are tailgating, and it's just a really, really cool atmosphere. It's a great vibe. So that was probably my favorite place to cover a game. But I'll tell you what, Wisconsin, fantastic. We had a blast out there. It is a great place. Just a lot to do. Everything is so kind of condensed and you know, right downtown, and great bars and restaurants. And it's just a really, really cool vibe there, too. So I would say probably those two are tied as to my two favorite places to go. I mean, that was, I wish, you know, Wisconsin was more frequent that we would make that trip. But I think those are my two favorite. I'll give you my least favorite too later if you want.
Yeah, I was just gonna ask you, what's the worst?
Champaign, Illinois. Rough to get to. Not easy.
Yeah,
I'm sure. No offense to the people in Champaign. They're wonderful people, I'm sure. But that's not the easiest city to get to. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, you know, my least favorite was, well, when I went to, it wasn't least favorite, but I remember going to Pittsburgh when you go every year when Rutgers would play Pittsburgh, and they'd make you turn on all your electronics. Like if I had a camera, turn it on. Like security's like looking at me like they want to punch me in the face because I gave them a look. And, they turn your computer on. I'm like, you know, we're going to see the Panthers play the Scarlet Knights. You're not guarding the president here. But that was kind of funny. In Maryland, I never liked Maryland. The press box is in an awful spot. They charge you for the food in there. I never liked going to Maryland. But my favorite was West Virginia. I mean, they treated us so well. Such a good setup, such a good spread. And when you come into the town, like you're riding through West Virginia, and it's like, man, I'm in West Virginia. You know what the cliches are with that. And you get there, and then there's this college town, which is massive surges of people. So it was really cool. But how about this year, Chris? You know, road trips this year. Which one are you looking forward to most? I guess it's a pretty easy one. I would venture a guess.
The USC one, man. That's gonna be that's going to be pretty cool to go. You know, that's it's going to be so weird to be covering a Big Ten game in Los Angeles. I don't think I'll ever get used to that. But yeah, USC, that's going to be the trip of the year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting out there for that one, and probably take a few extra days. And we were talking about, wait, is that the one where you have the wedding to go to that weekend? So you only get a couple days?
I have a wedding the night before in New Jersey. I'm in the wedding. So my plan right now is to be on it and I'm going to regret this probably. I'm going to be on a 6 a.m. flight out of Newark going to LAX. Hopefully land in L.A. without any issues at about 9:30 in the morning. And I'm really praying for like an afternoon, like 3:30 p.m. get kickoff. So I don't have to race over to the stadium. But it's going to be a long couple of days. But yeah, I'm planning to stay a couple extra days as Rutgers has the bye week right after that. So make a nice little trip out of it.
Yeah. I don't know when I'm going or coming back, but definitely make it a more than a 2-day trip. And I think that's a great thing for the fans with all these new teams in the Big Ten and it, a lot of new places to go. You know, it's exciting to take a road trip somewhere, you know, and with UCLA, USC, even you know, Washington up there. I've never been up there. So those will be fun places to go, and hopefully there's a lot more of them. But you know, getting back to the nuts and bolts of the writing stuff. I mean, you know, we talked about the story stuff. Is there stuff that they kind of you omit from things? I know we talk about it when guys do cliche stuff. I don't know. You know, you hear players talk. Is there a part of that you could talk about maybe, you know, and I know covering basketball, it was a little different. Was there a lot of different in stuff the way you went about it, basketball and football?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that, you know, you do try and make sure that you never obviously change a quote. So if something is said in a quote, you got to keep it, right? But I think that you kind of pick and choose your quotes, obviously, depending on what was said. And sometimes there's a lot of cliches in these answers. And, you know, that's just kind of the way that they're told to you know, conduct themselves sometimes, which is fine. But yeah, I mean, definitely there are some things that you kind of say, okay, I'm not going to use that quote, because at the end of the day, what is it really adding to the story? You know, what insight is it giving you? And then a lot of times too, like, you know, the information that you use in a story, obviously is not a direct quote, but it's information that you got from a player. Maybe he's telling you about how much, you know, weight he's put on the weight room working with Jay Butler, stuff like that. So you definitely kind of pick and choose. But yeah, basketball, a little bit more open, a little bit more freer with what they're saying. You know, not quite as guarded as sometimes as the football players are. So yeah, that is definitely, you know, you gotta be selective with how you use your quotes and you know, what guys are saying. And then too, like, you know, these kids too, and a lot of times they will say something that I know how they meant it and it didn't come off that way, and I won't use that stuff. You know, we're not out to get anybody. So, you know, we try and give them the benefit of the doubt with that.
Right. How about with the NBA? Was it different, you know, dealing with that in that regard with quotes with players and interactions when you were interviewing them?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, those guys are, you know, professional athletes and multimillionaires, and they really don't have, you know, they don't need to have a filter, a lot of them, and a lot of them don't. When I was covering the Knicks, it's funny to see them in the playoffs now, and I think about it, and I'm covering them, their home games in the playoffs, so that's been cool. But when I was covering them full time, they were terrible. I mean, they were 17-65. I mean, it was a David Fizdale era, which wasn't a very long era, but that was the time I was covering the team. So it was a lot of young kids at that time too. And they're, you know, there's some similarities to the Rutgers football team, you know, kind of last couple of years of how there's kind of bringing in some young players and trying to develop them. Obviously it's a lot going a lot better for Rutgers than it did with those Knicks. But yeah, definitely, you know, NBA players are a lot freer with what they're saying. And at the end of the day, like, they have to be more accountable. They're adults. They're not kids. You know, they're paid professionals, highly paid professionals. So there's definitely a difference in the way you handle that.
Okay. And last one, Chris, what's your expectations for this year from, you know, we talk about it from a professional standpoint, because there are certain things that are more favorable to us for our job. In terms of what transpires over the course of the season, like, you know, I'll go back to the Chris Ash era. It was miserable writing, and I couldn't wait to go into basketball because it was just, you know, trying to not destroy the team when they're losing, you know, by, you know, what, 40, 50 points a game. It was just tough. So what do you kind of hope for this year from a professional perspective to see from Rutgers?
Yeah, listen, I think that we all just want, you know, an interesting season, and obviously, you know, winning or losing, obviously we're objective, right? We don't care about who wins or loses. We're just looking for good stories, good games. But at the end of the day, you always know that if you cover a winning program, if you cover a winning team, there's going to be more attention, more people are interested, fans want to know more information from the start of the season to the finish, and they're more engaged. So I think that you want to cover a good team. You want to cover a team that, like I said, has interest, is continuing to get engagement. So that's my hope. And that's kind of my expectation too. I think that Rutgers is in prime position to take a step forward again after what they did last season with so many players coming back. So I think that that's kind of what I think should happen. I think that they should have another winning season. I think that they should be going to another bowl game. The schedule is more favorable this season. So yeah, I mean, like I said, that's the hope. That, you know, you're covering an interesting team and a team that really keeps fans' interest from, you know, the start of the season to the end.
All right. Excellent. Well, Chris, man, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. You know, like I said, we talk every day when we're there at the game or practice, whatever have you. And it's nice to be able to do it, you know, for the people and give them a little insight. So we really appreciate you coming on, man.
For sure. This was fun. I'll come on anytime.
Yeah, we'll do it again, definitely. And you can check out Chris Eisman on Twitter at Chris Eisman. That's Eisman, C-R-I-S before the Eisman, obviously. So check him out. Give him a follow. Always great stuff. And thank you for listening. And as always, you can, you know, converse with myself and rest of our staff on the Roundtable Message Board at ScarletNation.com. If you're not a VIP member, join now. We have great deals. We're talking Rutgers football 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.